reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Another high-ranking Bolivian military official has been arrested in connection with Wednesday's apparent failed coup. Government Minister Eduardo Del Castillo said that former Navy Vice Admiral Juan Arnez Salvador was taken into custody, in addition to Army General Juan Jose Zuniga, the apparent leader of the failed rebellion. Armored vehicles rammed the doors of Bolivia's government palace in the capital La Paz Wednesday. President Luis Arce directly confronted Zuniga and his rebellious troops and vowed to stand firm. He named a new army commander, who immediately ordered the troops to stand down. The soldiers withdrew hours later, and hundreds of Arce supporters rushed the square outside the palace, waving Bolivian flags, singing the national anthem, and cheering. Zuniga claimed the attempted coup was an effort to restore democracy in Bolivia, which has been plagued by infighting between President Arce and his one-time ally, former leftist President Evo Morales, which has paralyzed the government's efforts to deal with the country's economic crisis. VOA Scott Walterman spoke with VOA Latin American service reporter Celia Mendoza about that aspect.
Over the past few years, the economy of Bolivia, which was one of the fastest growing economically in the region, has stalled. They're going backwards in their food security, economy, poverty, and all those elements have contributed for people to start getting anxious and angry about the situation of the country. And therefore, this claim could be plausible.
For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as well as on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter, and download our app, VOA News. This is VOA News. 400 Kenyan security officers arrived in Haiti this week, part of a contingent of international police forces sent to quell gang violence in the Caribbean nation. At the same time, protests over proposed tax increases in Kenya turned deadly. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
Kenyan police officers arrived in Haiti Tuesday on a mission to help restore order in the troubled Caribbean nation. Meanwhile, protests over proposed tax increases that have rocked Kenya over the last 2 weeks resumed. Several people were shot dead outside Kenya's parliament as police clashed with protesters who stormed the complex after lawmakers passed the highly controversial tax hikes. Kenyan President William Ruto on Wednesday said that after having reflected on the content of the finance bill and listening to the people who are against it, he's decided not to sign it. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The European Union is expected to sign a security agreement with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Thursday, pledging to keep delivering weapons, military training, and other aid to Kyiv for years to come. The agreement will lay out the EU's commitment to help Ukraine in 9 areas of security and defense policy, including arms delivery, military training, defense industry cooperation, and demining. That's according to a draft seen by Reuters. Zelensky is expected to sign the pact at a summit of EU leaders in Brussels. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said Wednesday border arrests have fallen more than 40% in the 3 weeks since President Joe Biden halted asylum processing. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
The department said that Border Patrol's average daily arrests over a 7-day period have fallen below 2,400 from before President Joe Biden's proclamation took effect on June 5th. That's still above the 1,500 mark needed to resume asylum processing. Here's U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas speaking in Tucson.
The safety and security of the American public is indeed our highest priority. We screen and vet individuals when we encounter them.
He added that while Biden's executive action is effective, Congress needs to step up. Hi, up and joining Washington.
Mexican President-elect Claudia Sheinbaum said on Wednesday she has no plans to increase taxes for the general population, but that her administration would continue to invest in major infrastructure projects and increase the minimum wage. She will take office in October after winning a landslide election victory earlier this month, becoming the first woman in Mexico to be elected president. She has vowed to maintain social welfare programs expanded under her predecessor, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyan President Ruto will not sign controversial tax hike bill into law.
I concede, and therefore I will not sign the 2024 finance bill, and it shall subsequently be withdrawn.
Kenyans question why their police are being deployed to Haiti while unrest turns at home. Traders in Tanzania embark on a go-slow strike to protest numerous taxes and collection methods. South Africa's COSATU labor union looks forward to working with a national government of unity. Tensions among East African community members make attaining stability difficult.
We're thinking here, for example, about tensions between the DRC and Rwanda. We've also had some issues between Kenya and Somalia, so that's not very helpful.
And Joe Biden and Donald Trump are set to debate in Atlanta today, Thursday. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In an address to the nation on Wednesday, Kenyan President William Ruto said that he has decided not to sign a bill that included a series of tax increases. He spoke one day after more than 20 people were killed during protests against the bill that led to clashes with police. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
Kenyan President William Ruto says after consideration, he's decided not to sign the controversial Finance Bill 2024.
I concede, and therefore, I will not sign the 2024 finance bill, and it shall subsequently be withdrawn, and I have agreed with these members that that becomes our collective position.
President Ruto made the statement from the State House on Wednesday in the presence of lawmakers and thanked those who voted yes for the bill. The bill won approval in Parliament Tuesday, but lawmakers fled the scene as clashes between police and protesters mounted and hundreds of demonstrators stormed the complex. Parts of the Parliament were set on fire and burned for hours. Late Tuesday evening, the Kenyan president condemned protesters' storming of the Parliament as treasonous and a threat to national security. On Wednesday, human rights defenders and good governance organizations gathered at Kenya Human Rights Commission to condemn the violence against the protesters and accused the president of being accountable for what had happened on Tuesday. Grace Wangechi is a human rights and social development expert and the executive director of Independent Medical Legal Unit, or IMLU, an organization created in 1993 to protest against torture in Kenya.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with Kenyans getting onto the streets to voice themselves. This is a constitutional provision as per the Kenya Constitution 2010.
Lorna Diaz is a human rights defender and executive coordinator of Gay and Lesbian Coalition of Kenya.
There is nothing that justifies the use of live bullets on protesters. The destruction of property that happened on the streets was a security failure, and this regime should take the blame.
Deputy President of Kenya Rigathi Gachagua, who also addressed the nation after his boss from the coastal city of Mombasa, says he sympathizes with the president but blames the National Intelligence Service head, Nurdin Haj, for Tuesday's violence. Gachagua said that had the National Intelligence Service briefed the president that this bill was unpopular with the Kenyan people, there would not have been deaths and mayhem, he said. There was no immediate response from the intelligence service. The deputy president asked the protesters to call off other planned protests tomorrow, saying that when that happens, quote, we can begin an honest conversation on how to work on our country, unquote. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in a telephone call Wednesday with Kenyan President William Ruto, welcomed Ruto's efforts to calm deadly unrest
but urged restraint and investigations into alleged abuses. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said Blinken thanked President Ruto for taking steps to reduce tensions and pledging to engage in dialogue with the protesters and civil society. According to the French news agency AFP, Ruto said Wednesday he was withdrawing a bill containing tax hikes, which had triggered massive protests in which more than 20 people were killed the day before, with demonstrators ransacking parliament. Miller said in a statement that Blinken underscored the importance of security forces demonstrating restraint and refraining from violence and encouraging prompt investigations into allegations of human rights abuses. Traders in Tanzania, particularly in the popular market area of Kariakoo in the capital Dar es Salaam, have been holding a go-slow strike since June 14. The Tanzania Citizen reports that the traders are dissatisfied with numerous taxes and collection methods imposed by the country's revenue authority. The government says removing all taxes could affect the implementation of national development projects. This comes as Tanzania's northern neighbor, Kenya, is experiencing deadly strikes over proposed taxes. VOA Swahili service reporter Eid Ewusu and I discuss the situation.
For some time now, traders in the Kariakoo market have had their complaints, and the biggest one is the customs tax systems at the port, which, according to them, has become a source of harassment from the Tanzanian Revenue Authority, because they want a system that will enable them to pay all taxes and fees together so that they are free to do their businesses. But they also complain that the value-added tax should be reduced from the current level of 18%. Another thing is the existence of a tax law bill that provides a penalty of up to $6,000 for tax offenses, and these, and according to them, that's an oppression because most of their capital is small and the business is not that big. They have also talked about being arrested carelessly by the officials of the Tanzania Revenue Authority for those tax reasons.
What has been the response so far of the government to the traders' demand to reduce some taxes?
The government of Tanzania, through the Minister of Finance, has explained that after meeting with the leaders of the traders, there are some things they have agreed on, including stopping the arrest of traders in the market for tax reasons, but also for those related to tax laws. They are still looking at the government to see how they can work on them, because the government also is implementing many development projects that requires a lot of money. And through the committee that created, they will work on all the complaints with the aim of ending the crisis.
Are all the traders adhering to the strike call, and what has been the impact on goods and services?
The reaction of traders regarding the strike has been received well, I can say, because in the first 2 days, almost all the shops were closed at Kariakoo Market. But since after the talks with the government and asking them to open their businesses again, at the Kariakoo, there are those who have opened and others are still closed, because they claim that this has been repeated. So they want to hear President Samia Suluhu's statement to satisfy themselves before they open their shops again. And right now, the strike has spread to about 7 other regions, and the government has not yet explained what is appropriate for those other regions. But regarding the availability of products, has been affected, and this is because the Kariakoo market is the center of many businesses here in Tanzania and other some neighboring countries. So buyers who travel to buy various products here, they've described that they've been affected by this strike.
That was VOA Swahili service reporter Eid Uwesu speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. You are listening listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 27th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Four hundred Kenyan security officers arrived in Haiti this week. They are part of a contingent of international police forces sent to quell gang violence and restore democratic rule in the Caribbean nation. At the same time, protests over proposed tax increases in Kenya turned violent as demonstrators stormed the parliament building and clashes with police turned deadly. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariam Adialo reports that the confluence of events has led some in Kenya to wonder how the government can restore peace to another country while troubles are brewing at home.
Kenyan police officers arrived in Haiti Tuesday on a mission to help restore order in the troubled Caribbean nation. Meanwhile, protests over proposed tax increases that have rocked Kenya over the last 2 weeks resumed. Several people were shot dead outside Kenya's parliament as police clashed with protesters who stormed the complex after lawmakers passed the highly controversial tax hikes. Some of the protesters, like Dennis, questioned the point of sending police to Haiti when there is such unrest in Kenya.
They went yesterday at Haiti, but it's so ironical that back at home here, we don't have peace. The police themselves are fighting us with the common mwananchi. But again, we've taken our police to go to Haiti to fight people from other nationality. Well, at home, we are not at peace.
Kelvin Moses was not a protester Tuesday, but he echoes those views.
For me, it's a double-edged sword because you cannot be taking troops out of the country while the same country is facing instability, you know. So it is like you are trying to help your neighbor, whereas your house is on fire.
Speaking at a send-off ceremony earlier this week, Kenyan President William Ruto told police officers departing for Haiti their mission will help lasting peace return to the conflict-ravaged country.
This mission is one of the most urgent, important, and historic in the history of global solidarity. It is a mission to affirm the universal values of community of nations and a mission to take a stand for humanity.
Last year, a United Nations Security Council resolution approved the Kenyan-led mission to help tackle violence and restore peace in the mostly gang-controlled nation. But earlier this year, the High Court of Kenya ruled against the deployment, saying it was unconstitutional. Issues cited by the court include the lack of a reciprocal agreement between the countries. The Kenyan government eventually secured that agreement, but the same people who sued the government recently filed another lawsuit seeking to block the deployment. The High Court has yet to make a ruling. Javas Bigambo is a Kenyan lawyer and governance consultant.
In the event that this issue is settled as unconstitutional again, what then will befall the Kenyan government, especially on the part of the executive, the issue of security officers being deep in mission in Haiti and perhaps being demanded that they be recalled back to base, back to the country.
Bigambo tells VOA, while this mission puts Kenya on the global map as player in international peacekeeping, all Kenyan eyes will be on Haiti to see whether the police are making a difference. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
A spokesperson for the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, a close ally of the African National Congress, ANC, says the group looks forward to working with the Government of National Unity when it is finally formed. Acting spokesperson Matthew Parks said COSATU realizes it will have to work a little harder for the workers of South Africa, given the reality of a power-sharing government created by the May 29th election. He tells me that while COSATU is disappointed the ANC did not win convincingly, it is happy that the ANC will form a government of national unity.
We welcome that our ally, the African National Congress, who COSATU campaigned for, did win the elections nationally and in most provinces and will be forming government. We were disappointed, though, that despite our best efforts, the ANC did not receive an outright majority nationally and in several provinces for the first time since 1994. But nonetheless, we are happy that the ANC has been able to put together a government nationally and internationally, and also has been able to do so similarly across the provinces, and that gives us comfort that we can continue on the manifesto mandate of the ANC for the new administration.
You mentioned that COSATU did campaign for the ANC, but you also mentioned that you have mixed feelings. How do you interpret the mixed feelings?
Well, we had hoped the ANC could have had received a 51% outright majority and thus formed government on its own, and thus being a better place to implement this manifesto mandate. But nonetheless, it has been able to put together the numbers, and we'll have to engage other parties to support its legislation and budgets. So it will be a little bit more complicated. It will be a little bit more difficult, but nonetheless, we think we can manage it.
What do you think this new coalition government or government of national unity, what would it mean for the workers of South Africa?
It's going to make life a bit more complicated because we'll now have to engage not just with the ANC in government, but also to engage other parties. It will mean that many issues that we have supported will be contested by those other parties. So we're going to have to do more work to engage them to make sure that the interests of workers are protected and that the needs of working class communities are also invested in.
Matthew Parks is the acting spokesperson for the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg, South Africa. The East Africa Community, EAC, envisions a prosperous, competitive, secure, stable, and politically united region. The regional bloc of eight partner states had agreed that peace and security are prerequisites to social and economic development within the community, but tensions among some members are making it difficult. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached political analyst David Monda for more on the EAC's struggles.
I think the community is really struggling because of the tensions between community members, the executives of the different community members. So we're thinking here, for example, about tensions between the DRC and Rwanda. We've also had some issues between Kenya and Somalia. So that's not very helpful. But also the community also suffers from the executive leadership in member states being members of multiple communities. So we have this case, for example, of Tanzania being a member of EAC, but also a member of SADC. So that really divides loyalty, creates a lot of contradictory policy frameworks and challenges. But I think the third level also is that the community still struggles with connectivity, not only of its infrastructure, but also of its people. So a very basic example is, you know, we do not have a direct rail line or road line between Mombasa on the East African coast and the port of Kinshasa on the Atlantic. That those connections are so central.
Given those contradictions, the ultimate goal of the East African community was to have a political federation. Do you think that is possible in the foreseeable future?
Not in our lifetime, but probably in one or two generations, I think it will be more feasible. And I don't mean to be skeptical. I'm just being realistic. I say that on two broad levels. One is security and structural infrastructure. It's still very weak between community members. Think of the DRC. It has its own internal civil war and challenges. You think of South Sudan. It has its own problems, the different factions between Salva Kiir and Riek Machar. Think of Somalia, where the central government in Mogadishu is only the government in Mogadishu, has very limited control of the rest of the country. And the impact that has on the borders of other countries, which might be more stable, is devastating because it's difficult to regulate who goes across borders. It's difficult to safely engage in cross-border trade. But it's also difficult to scale mass projects like road projects. So, for example, when there's war in South Sudan, it's difficult to expand the road from Mombasa all the way to Juba or from Kampala to Juba. I think there's a huge political problem there. But I think also in terms of the economic union, which will be at the center of any political federation, I think we're still a long, long, long way, simply because governments want to protect their sovereignty. The leadership of each country wants to have its own currency. And then secondly, there's an angst, there's a fear particularly from the smaller economies in a community like Somalia, like Sudan, like Burundi, that they will end up being dominated by the larger economies.
That was David Mota, a professor of political science at the City University of New York. He spoke from New York with viewers Douglas Mfuga. U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump face off in their first debate of this election cycle today, Thursday. From Atlanta, viewers Carla Yu tell us what to expect.
Donald Trump and Joe Biden enter their first debate of this campaign, with each telling voters that electing their opponent would be catastrophic. Trump says Biden is ruining the country.
Inflation is raging, crime is out of control, Europe is in chaos, the Middle East is exploding, Iran is emboldened, China is on the march, and this horrible, horrible president is dragging us toward World War III.
Biden says Trump would take the country backwards.
All progress, all freedom, all opportunities at risk. Trump is trying to make the country forget just how dark and unsettling things were when he was president. But we'll never forget.
Public opinion polling shows this is a close race, raising the stakes for this debate, says Northeastern University journalism professor Alan Schroeder.
I think that puts sort of equal pressure on both of the candidates, both in terms of the opportunity the debate presents to them, but also the risk.
This debate is unique in featuring both a sitting president and a former president, says University of Pennsylvania communications professor Kathleen Hall Jamieson.
So the public is more knowledgeable about both of these candidates as individuals, more likely to know about their temperament, their habits of mind, their disposition. But this year, because of the age of both, there is a need, even if you think you know a lot about both of the candidates, and you're more likely to this year, for you to be able to say, are they mentally acute enough to be president of the United States and mentally stable enough to be president of the United States?
Political debates are about message and moments, says political analyst Brett O'Donnell.
You've got to drive a message consistently across the debate, but then you want to have a couple of moments in the debate that are the shiny objects, so to speak, that the press will pay attention to and that allow you to exercise competitive advantage.
This will be the earliest presidential debate in U.S. history, with neither Trump nor Biden officially nominated as his party's candidate. There will be no opening statements Thursday night. Both candidates will have their microphones muted when it's not their turn to speak. Kelly Yu, VOA News, Atlanta.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton, Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information. This is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you.